ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, March 5th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always. And before we start with the regular show, we want to say rest in peace, King Kong Bundy. You were a big part of my childhood, WrestleMania 2 in Chicago against the Hulkster. And another sad news, this one actually sad news. Well, no offense, King Kong Bundy, like it's sad. Like, no, sorry the Bundy family. He's the most, like he's the only Bundy that passes away that I can feel sad about. But when we look at the Football Factory in Toronto, an establishment for our sports over the last decade, and there was a fire yesterday, Dwayne.
Yeah, and look, the Football Factory, for those that don't know, was one of the original sponsors of It's Called Football, so they were appreciating local coverage of the game. Big TFC fans there. I know one of the groups uses that as their pregame spot as well before TFC games. It's Bathurst and Queen, for those that don't know. So it's kind of right down in there in an historic part of the city. It's two doors down, had a massive five-alarm fire, so there obviously was some smoke damage and so forth over there. By all accounts this morning, it looks like the bar will be able to continue on. There might be a little bit of renovation there. Unfortunately, a young man's life was taken in this who lived below the barbershop that where the fire started. So obviously thoughts go out there. There is a GoFundMe to try and help the displaced people. If you want to take a look at that, if you're a Torontonian or just one who, cares about people, you can go to GoFundMe.com and I'll spell it out from here. It is ZWXY9G-Fire-Recovery-Fund. They're about $6,400 into a $50,000 goal. So a lot of ways to go there. So if you can help that out, if you can, great there. And hopefully the Football Factory can get back and running in full force soon enough. I know Patrick, the owner there, is very passionate about that place. So I wanted to start with that. And, my childhood, too, was also influenced by King Kong Bundy to be, it's unserious. The man died, but, we're talking about wrestling from the 80s here. I think Hogan robbed him in WrestleMania 2. I'm pretty sure that wasn't completely on the up and up, Kevin. I'm almost convinced that maybe it was the fix was there. I don't know what you think.
Maybe, scripted versus predetermined. But just to go back on the Football Factory for a second, and for fires and people living in apartments and houses, renter's insurance. Make sure that you have renter's insurance. It is valuable, and you don't start from scratch. So if this can make us do anything, first of all, smoke alarm, make sure you have batteries in it, and make sure you have your renter's insurance. Between $20 and $30 a month usually is enough, and protect your belongings and the people you love.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. You can find that in the GoFundMe, as I said, there again. I won't give the whole address again. I'm sure you can just by Googling Toronto Fire, Football Factory Fire, you can find the stories, which will link to that page. If you can help, please do so. All right, shall we talk about soccer?
Let's talk about soccer, the world of football with a soccer perspective. And we start this morning with new rules. New rules for the beautiful game, Dwayne. FIFA has mandated new rules to take effect in June this year. And it does touch on a few controversial points that the rules did have before. I have some in front of me. Let's start with the most controversial ones in this year. The handball rule. Handballs will now lead to severe punishment in football. The rule will penalize every handball mistake done, be it voluntarily or not. So that means as soon as a ball touches the hand in the box, it's going to be a penalty from now on.
Yeah, well, and then also the rule as it was written before, you could actually technically score off of the hand if it was not on purpose. I think the Irish might be familiar with how that works. That was on purpose.
Thierry Henry, Thierry Henry goal against Ireland to prevent them from going to Rio? Yeah,
that one was a bit of a mess for them there. But so that was put in there too. Look, it's to me, I don't know whether they're making this better or not by this. You really want penalties for every flick of the ball? I mean, I have long been an advocate that we need a significant overhaul of the handball rule. I would be willing to do stuff that people, you know, traditionalists might find drastic or insane. Like, I think there should be a smaller box that applies to handball, because if the ball brushes your hand, you know, to the side of the goal, 17 yards from goal by accident, that's not a penalty. That's the punishment doesn't fit that crime, right? So I don't know what the answer is there. Maybe in the six, maybe in something. Obviously, people are always going to try and game this system. If it's automatic touch, you're going to have forwards that are shooting at hands now.
That's something I haven't talked about. But yeah, people will just, okay, I'm close to the box, but I'm close to the sideline at the same time. And usually I would deflect the ball off the defender to make it go out to get a corner. But now I'm just going to raise the ball a bit. I'm just going to aim for his hands. And, you know, if he gets it, I get a penalty, and this could be an advantage. So we'll see if that happens. But off the top of my head, it does seem like a plausible player reaction to gain an advantage, to just lob the ball, make sure you hit a hand, and you got yourself a penalty.
Well, yeah, and look, there's always going to be ways to game the system. I mean, players have been diving for 100 years, right? Like, players are going to look for advantages here. The other idea that I've always had for a handball, Kevin, would be to just scrap the penalty kick unless it's maybe in the 6-yard box or like the ball directly gets prevented from going in the goal. And then in that case, I think it should just be an awarded goal.
Yeah, goaltending in basketball, that if you stop the ball from going in after it goes down from its arc, it's a goal. It's a basket no matter what. And I think that could be a good way. If the ball's going into the net, if it's not interrupted and then the hand interrupts it, should be a goal awarded. Maybe that will help. We'll see.
Yeah, but in terms of like accidental handballs on the peripheral of the 18, to me the answer is an indirect free kick. But that's a dramatic change in the rules and something that they don't seem to have the stomach for. This is a simpler one, like a black and white kind of ruling, which, you know, in the era of VAR is going to make for some really bizarre and unfair decisions, bluntly, based on the flow of the play. You know, if it glances your pinky, it shouldn't be a penalty in my mind. Yeah. But that's maybe I'm fighting against time there. People are very pedantic sometimes when they're coming to the interpretation, particularly when their partisanship gets mixed into it. Yeah. But we'll see.
It's one thing to agree with that rule. It's another thing to agree with that rule when it's against your team in a cup final and it costs you your chances of winning a trophy. Yeah, then the rules become a bit more muddy.
Yeah, I think we could all agree that the loophole that you could technically score off your hand, it's good to get rid of that, though. So we'll agree on that one.
Yeah, we'll just keep Lampard to make sure that he scores with his bum on his thighs, and that works.
There you go.
Let's move to another rule that has been changed or tweaked a bit. The substitution rule. Players will be allowed to exit the pitch at any point upon substitution or red carding, so you don't have to just get out from the sideline between the two coaches bend the two benches and where the fourth official is. Now you can literally just, even with injury, which was already the case, you can just walk off the pitch at any point. The new player will come on and then you just make your way around the pitch, all in an effort to streamline the substitution and the red carding events.
Yeah, and look, they didn't go far enough in this one. It shouldn't be that you're allowed to go off the field at any point.
You should be required
so that they don't stroll to the sideline, which is still going to happen unless they directly enforce the idea that they must leave immediately there. It is providing – this is a potentially going to eliminate a time-wasting idea. I know from working with the referees at League One Ontario when I was doing that work that they do automatically add 30 seconds on for each substitution. So even if you make a sub in stoppage time, they're just adding 30 seconds. But it often takes 50 to get off the pitch, right? So it makes sense. If you could find a way to speed that up, I don't think anyone's going to complain about this. And why should it matter where you go off, right?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Maybe this – yeah, I think this probably was a rule that was based on like old-timey need to, you know, write down, there's no numbers in the players' backs and they have to figure who's on the pitch and stuff like that, probably. But yeah, this is the modern era. We can figure that out.
Yeah, exactly. Just zoom with the camera. You'll know who's there. All right, let's move on to another rule. Here's the penalties rule. This one has to do with penalties. The goalkeeper is only being required to have 1 foot on the line during a penalty kick. I think that's interesting because the 1 foot part will give him a better lunge right off the line if he has 1 foot a bit higher, like a bit in front of the line, and he guesses right, his lunge could be a bit more forward than sideways, and attacking the ball, having only 1 foot on the line, will give an option to the goalkeeper to lunge a bit more forward towards the goal, the goal scorer or the ball, and to stop the goal. So I think that's interesting in a way, and it gives a bit more leeway of how to move for the player.
And I can't help but maybe think that they're thinking there's going to be more penalties, so they wanted to give a slight more advantage to have more stopped. It is exciting when you see a penalty stop. It's almost like a goal being scored, right?
Well, so what's more exciting, a penalty being scored or penalties being stopped? Like when I see the referee point to the spot, I almost automatically imagine it's a goal. So when it's stopped, I'm like, oh man, they didn't score. Here we go, right?
Yeah, no, we've all been in the stadium when a penalty's been stopped by the team that you're cheering for. At least, you know, I hope we all have. Otherwise, you might not be cheering for a very good team. took Toronto a long time, if memory serves.
Well, I was going to say, depends. If you're in Toronto, you saw it quite often, a penalty being stopped in your own stadium. But it was your own players.
Martin Bailey did the stats out after they missed it, after Rosario missed their 0-2 on the year in penalties so far, and Toronto FC's penalty conversion rate is less than the 60% or something, which is not even possible. But at any rate,
exactly.
Regardless, to get back to the point at hand, yeah, this might give more opportunity for a goalie to make an athletic play, which I think is something you should be encouraging. I guess maybe by having more penalties, you're expecting higher goals for or two. But as you say, watching a player stroller, you know, knock a ball in from the spot is not exactly that riveting, really. It's and you know, for the top teams, it's 80-90% really is your conversion rate. The only time you really see, you know, a lack of conversion is in a penalty shootout, and that's because you're getting further down the list. You're getting away from your specialist. So
and there's a bigger sample of data at the same time, so there's a bit more probability of having penalties being stopped when you have a bunch of penalties being played at the same time. So, no, it's understandable.
No, for sure.
Now, let's move on to another rule. This one is not necessarily a big deal, and we'll see how it actually influences the game, because we never see it happen before. But team officials can receive yellow cards and red cards. So, instead of having warnings and having, example, a MLS official telling Rémigard to quiet, calm down, or I'm gonna throw you out of the game. Now they can give him a yellow card, and if he continues, they'll give him another yellow, and that's a red. And sir, you're out. So verbal warnings are being scrapped and replaced with the cards for team officials involved in misconduct. So for coaches, assistant coaches, managers, players on the sideline, team officials.
Trainers, fourth assistant, anyone that's an official that's on the sheet is what it would come down to. I think this one was put in place just on the off chance that Mike Dean might get to one day give Jose Mourinho a red card, because that would be just epic television right there.
Well, yeah, Mourinho's reaction would be great television, but that's a good one. Removal of players and barriers. The rule will require the players to be at least a meter away from the opponent's barrier to avoid interfering with the opponent's defense. So they're talking about walls, and they're talking about no offensive players in the same wall. So off dead balls, like free kicks and stuff, there'll be a bit more space. So this is to create maybe a bit more amazing plays by having more space between the ball and the walls, so you can curl the ball around the wall a bit better and maybe score a bit more wonder goals with free kicks and dead balls.
I guess, yeah. I'm going to be curious to see how that one plays out. I know that it's been a common tactic to sort of have one of the attacking players sort of nudge the player to create some space and to shoot the ball through the wall. That has been a tactic when, you know, you can argue whether that should be legal or not in terms of the physicality involved in that. So that no longer is an option for teams to do that. So you're right. This will mean that most often that the players will be trying to bend it around the wall or do that famous trick that everyone loves when they get the ball to jump over the ball when it's
they
on
just
the ground.
Throw it underneath. Drogba scored a wonder goal like that for Montreal, just shooting the ball low, and then everyone just jumped. They're like, oh man, why did we jump? And then every single shot after that, the wall didn't jump because they didn't want to get nutmegged again, but they just curled it around them. So it's there's some tactics going on and some gamesmanship going on in free kicks too.
No, for sure. That is my favorite goals is when they go through the wall. But you won't be able to do the edge, the elbow, the big guys are going to get a little burnt on that one. But I think that they're probably just trying to take some of that off the ball stuff out of the game with that rule change.
Okay, two more rules before we move on. The shooting rule, the ball not having to leave the penalty area at goal kicks and defending teams' free kicks in the penalty area. So you have a bit less constraints to, okay, if you're the goalkeeper, you're having a goal kick, you have to make sure you boot it out. Now you can just pass it to the guy next to you, even if he's in the box, and it actually will count. And it won't be a play stopped, and it won't be just a restart.
Yeah, this was actually a time-wasting issue that was happening already. The teams were doing this on purpose to try and slow down high press and so on and so forth. They just continue to do that, and that would sort of slow the pace down a little bit. So now, you could pass it to anyone you want in the box, and it just means you're going to be exposing yourself. You better damn well know how to play to the back if you're going to do that short of a goal kick, right? So that's eliminating something that seems like it's an advantage for the keeper, but it was actually an advantage for the defending team a little bit, the way it was getting used in the modern tactics as a time waster, try and see what shape they're doing, kind of strategic play, and that no longer exists anymore. So it was kind of an outdated idea too. Why did you have to kick it out of the box? Why?
I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense. But I guess I didn't even know that was the case, right? That was one type of rule. They're like, oh, they're changing this. Okay. I didn't even know that was a rule. And I've been following soccer pretty closely for a decade, like a daily experience for me. So
like I said, the rule was basically the only time it came into play was when teams were using it negatively to try and slow the game down by purposely kicking it in the box. So now that's been taken away from them.
And this might be my favorite rule in the favorite rule change that's coming. And this will affect real life. And this will affect maybe even more online, like FIFA playing on my PS4, Dwayne. Okay, here it is. What happens if the referee interferes with play, Dwayne? That's my fascinating one. If the referee gets in the way of play, so if the ball hits the referee, the game is stopped and resumed with the possession given to the rightful team through a drop ball procedure. So if I'm one on, we have a 2-on-1, Piatti and Tider going down, barreling down against the keeper, 2-on-0. They're making a pass, but the referee is in the middle and it hits the referee and the ball goes back to the other team. Well, not this time around. With this change, the ball would go back to the impact and they would go back on their offensive. So that's going to be fun. And the amount of time, Dwayne, that I've been playing PlayStation soccer on FIFA and the ball hits the ref and they lose the ball and I get scored and I lose the game, well, that won't happen anymore. And I'm really happy about it.
Yeah, that is a... It's probably a good one there too. I used to referee when I was younger, and there's nothing worse as a referee when the ball hits you, because I refereed hockey more than soccer. But in hockey, it happens all the time because it's a fast moving paced game, right? And you always feel like a damn heel, but you're part of the play, right? So you have to let it play on. So giving the referees that out is kind of a nice little thing for them.
Yeah, and makes them less worried about their positioning, because they know if they affect the play now, they can just continue. So that's interesting. So those will be the new rules implemented in June. We'll see how it will be implemented in Major League Soccer. Maybe they'll wait for the season to end before implementing the new rules. There's always some leeway and time period of adjustment. So we'll see how long it does take for those new rules to be implemented in Major League Soccer. But those were voted a couple days ago in the FIFA board meetings and voted on. And those were going to be official for the next few months, and we'll get to live with them on the pitch. Now, moving away to another little tiny bit of news before we talk about the CONCACAF Champions League and the regular Champions League today. Dwayne, Major League Soccer has told its clubs, its 24 clubs for now, and the potential ones, to not negotiate TV deals, local TV broadcasting deals, further than 2022. And the thought behind it is they're going to probably package all the rights they have together for 2022 going forward, so that cycle from 2022 to the World Cup in 2026, which will be held in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. This seems to me, Dwayne, where some Soccer United Marketing, Major League Soccer's business hand, I would say, is putting all the rights together to make a big package that is going to be very enticing to big broadcasters for the 2026 World Cup and the fourth MLS season previous and maybe a few after, trying to package everything together to get a big chunk of money for the new rights.
Yeah, and I think this is the new model that we saw with Canadian Premier League. We talked about that on Two Solitudes. If you want to go back and give us $2 a month and listen to that in the archives, you can do so. But in short, it's just a smarter way to package a lot of deals into one to get a greater payoff for it. Now, the one question I do have is that currently, you know, MLS is very localized in its coverage in the United States. They do, have a Fox deal and an ESPN deal for the national games, but they're a very small portion of the schedule. And most of the coverage is local, you know, Atlantic Sports, whatever networks, right?
Example, Atlanta's on Fox Sports South, and there's a lot of Fox Sports and all this stuff like that that have local TV affiliates that are doing the broadcasting for the locally broadcast games.
Yeah, similar to what hockey's done down there as well. So that's something that most sports fans will be used to by now. Up here, it's a little different in the sense that the TSN deal is national. Now, the Impact don't have a ton. TBA is where most of their games are that aren't in the national. But in terms of the Whitecaps and TFC, well, the Whitecaps deal is entirely on TSN. TFC has some mix. There's still some games that are floating around different places. But outside of the Canadian Championship games, there's not really – you just know you turn to the TSN. It's just the bottom line. And a similar model down there, whether they're going to include the Canadian teams in that or whether the Canadian teams will be exempted from this because they have the TSN deal and they'll just renegotiate with them is unclear right now. But you're absolutely right. This has to have something to do with packaging things together in the lead up to the World Cup. And, you know, you could almost see them including – you know, pregame friendlies and so on and so forth in that, and maybe even the rights deal for the World Cup itself and get wrapped up in to what they end up signing. You know, you get the 2026 World Cup rights, but you also have to cover the national game, the MLS games nationally as well as part of that.
Like, you want to have the big candy, the big carrot at the end of the stick of having the World Cup in 2026. You have to give us 4 years of Major League Soccer coverage and help us grow our product and help us hype the World Cup, and then you'll get your candy of be able to broadcast that World Cup, which will be maybe one of the biggest World Cup ever broadcasted because of the fact that it's in Eastern, well, it'll be focused in North America. It'll be focused in the TV big market. So it's going to be a big World Cup marketing-wise and TV-wise, and we're looking at broadcast rights, and they want to make sure that they capitalize on those rights. And I think Major League Soccer, some, is going to pull a media pro. So they're going to do like the Canadian Premier League and Canadian soccer business and put everything in one, have one partner, and that partner might sub-sell or sub-rent other rights to be able to other broadcaster partners or other TV channels. Example, if Fox, let's use Fox because they have a lot of money to spend over the last few years. Fox gets the deal and they agree for 6 years, an example, to broadcast MLS, to broadcast some USL games, to broadcast U.S. men's national team, U.S. women's national team games, and international friendlies, and the new Confederations Cup, and then all the way to the hype of that World Cup. But Fox could probably turn around and sell a few friendlies to, okay, BN, let's give you one game here. Let's give this other game to ESPN Plus. So there might be a lending or a sublet of some rights too. But that's a long ways to go.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is a long ways to go, but there is exciting times across the board on the digital. It's such a transformative time right now in terms of what's happening on the platforms, because there's just different ways to deliver, which should allow for more access to more people if you're willing to pay for it, which is going to be the push-pull that I think happens in the next few years. But I think for those of us that just want access to stuff, it's going to be a better situation in the years ahead. And I think that these deals probably will benefit a lot of people.
Two games in the CONCACAF Champions League tonight, Dwayne. The Red Bulls at home versus Santos Laguna. That's going to be a fascinating one. At 8 p.m., this game will really be fascinating. Red Bulls against Santos Laguna. Laguna, great team. New York Red Bulls, very good team, Major League Soccer. This could be interesting. But the game to watch tonight, 10 p.m., Houston Dynamo at home versus Tigres. Tigres fans sold out the entire east part of the stadium. There's going to be an amazing atmosphere in Houston for this matchup. Tigres in Monterrey is not that far from Houston, and there's going to be a big traveling fan support. And that Houston and Tigres game tonight at 10 p.m. is going to be fascinating. I think it's going to be a great watch, Lane.
Yeah, well, perhaps. Tigres, having watched them up close and personal a lot last year, is a brilliant team that has never quite got it done in this competition. I think that there's a lot of eggs in their basket right now for this. I mean, I know that we're an MLS show and we should focus more on the MLS teams, but I think Tigres is the story in that. As you know, you mentioned the other game too as well. That one is, to me, a toss-up. Santos Laguna obviously has a lot of history in this competition. I don't know if they're quite at the top of their or their peak of their game right now compared to where they were when they were beaten up on poor Montreal and poor Toronto. But nonetheless, they still are a very dangerous team to play. And the Red Bulls, having gone to the semifinals, arguably the best team in the competition last year. Yes, I'm including Toronto FC and Chivas into that mix. They outshot Chivas by 20 shots or to one or something in that semifinal second leg. Unlucky to not get the result. They're going to be pretty angry. And all those MLS teams, they all want to be that first team to get it done. And it will happen sooner rather than later. I think on the whole, the Mexican teams are still better, clearly. But it's not, it's not 2008 anymore, right? Yeah. There does seem to be an ability to compete. There's more tactical intelligence out there. And this is just the TAM players coming in. It used to be that MLS teams would have three or four guys that were absolutely in there, but then they'd be throwing out, guys that weren't, we'll just say, by name, but guys that just weren't at the same level. And the Mexican teams would just expose those players. And we're not getting that anymore. And there's just more tactical awareness around the world to allow smaller teams to compete against larger teams, just in general, everywhere. And that includes in this competition, I still think. If I had to put money down, this Monterrey and Tigres is still my pick. Yeah.
And tomorrow at 8 p.m., Independiente and Sporting Kansas City and Monterrey Atlanta tomorrow night as well. Those will be the game in the Champions League, in the CONCACAF Champions League, and quickly in the regular Champions League. Again, today we have return legs today. Running 16, leg 2 of 2. We got Real Madrid at home at the Bernabeu versus Ajax. And we have Dortmund versus Tottenham today at 3 p.m. in Dortmund. Real Madrid is up 2-1 right now on Ajax, and Dortmund is down 0-3 going to the second leg. Tottenham is having a great Champions League run, at least in the round of 16, with a 3-goal advantage going to leg number 2. And we have two more games tomorrow, Porto-Roma tomorrow, and PSG-Man United tomorrow as well. But we'll focus on today, Madrid-Ajax, Dortmund-Tottenham. We'll talk about those results tomorrow on the show. And as always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of The World of Football with a Soccer Perspective. And until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.